Good evening and welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host and my co-host, Delilah Jones, president of Imagine Publicity. And good evening, Delilah. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Very good. I'm going to introduce our esteemed guest this evening, but just is there any little tidbit of information you'd like to pass on about your wonderful company this evening?
Well, it keeps me very, very busy.
Yes, it does.
And I have, you know, many, many different types of clients, and everyone, it seems, is really getting into the spotlight in their specific areas. And I'm, as long as I'm busy and they're happy, I'm happy. So, and that includes you.
Well, that's good. I'm happy. You're happy. We're all happy. And the guests this evening make me very happy because it encompasses many realms that I care about a lot, Delilah. And I'm sure that's no surprise to you. The themes that we have tonight kind of encompass a couple of things. It's all about youth empowerment, social justice, and advocacy for people on the periphery of society, which may include many things. And so without further ado, let me introduce Reverend L.A. McCray. And her organization is located in Connecticut proper geographically, but I believe her organization also encompasses Massachusetts as well. And she's the director of youth programs for the National Conference for Community and Justice, which I believe is a national organization. And just to give you a little thumbnail sketch, she's a graduate of the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and Wesley Theological Seminary. And she's also an esteemed member of the Phi Beta Kappa Honor Society. She has served as director of youth and young adult outreach for in five different churches, and currently she's the director of youth of youth programs at the NCCJ. And with her this evening, we have one of her student leaders by the name of Edwin from East Hartford, Connecticut. So I welcome both of you to Shattered Lives this evening. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Hi, Edwin. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. It's a pleasure to have you, and I think we have a wonderful agenda here because your organization is multifaceted. LA, you sent me a wealth of information, and I know that there's at least three basic components, and one has to do with a conference whose acronym is YES. Another one is Anytown, which is a year-long program, and another aspect is called Bridges. So if just to kind of give us a primer, if you wouldn't mind, would you like to explain maybe the purpose of your organization and what transpires on a day-to-day basis in terms of what you do, and we can get into other topics?
Sure, that sounds great.
Okay.
So the NCCJ, the National Conference for Community and Justice, was founded in 1927 as the National Conference for Christians and Jews. What happened in our political landscape at the time, there was a lot of anti-Catholic and anti-Semitic sentiment in our country. So some really great leaders in our country, such as Thurgood Marshall and Jane Addams and folk of that caliber, came together to really begin looking at sort of the systemic issues that were creating such a fertile environment for bias, bigotry, and racism to exist. Mm-hmm. And so that's our tradition. We come from a tradition of great thinkers, of social justice advocates, of human relations, and really of those who influence movement on the local scale and even on the global scale. So we come from a very, very, very strong tradition of activism and social justice. So what we're currently doing and our current focus is really on youth empowerment and youth-led social change. Edwin, along with some of our other young people, our other young leaders, have been involved in a variety of focus groups and conversations and really looking at some key questions. For instance, what does youth-led social change look like in the 21st century? How do we as adults support youth-led social change? So those types of questions really gave became the foundation for our YES conference, which is Youth Establishing Strength. That's what our YES program means. So In 2011, October, we had a YES conference in which over 300 young people, teachers, community members, and adult allies participated in. That was held at the Basketball Hall of Fame. And at the conference, Young people were really able to begin putting their ideas together and present on issues of bias-based bullying, but the young people said, you know, we don't want to talk about bullying. We want to talk about creating communities of love and communities of justice. So out of the conference, they identified five major areas that we could address in order to begin creating these communities of love. So I'll pause there because I know you have some additional questions for me.
Hey, well, when you talk about that, the strategies that they came up in the information that I had gleaned, what was it? Some of the things that came out of this conference, were they things such as learning how to intervene during situations in which there are problems, so that things don't escalate? And social identity and social justice integrated into students' culture and curriculum, making informal safe spaces, changing the way that they interact with each other, may perhaps think about themselves, and being able to come from a point of strength and ability versus a position of fear or a punitive stance. Are those some of the strategies they came up with?
Absolutely, all of that and more. So the young people were really focused on how to create positive, safe, inclusive school climate for all people. And as a part of that, we looked at a variety of ways to really empower youth voice to do all of the things that you've mentioned. Now, the five areas that the young people identified in terms of youth-led social change and youth empowerment in the schools were culture. So one of them was culture shift. So having the ability to create and nurture space in the school and community that supported a loving, affirming, inclusive culture. The second was talk it out. Young people identified with not being able to have safe and inclusive space to really talk about their core social identities. So the young people really wanted opportunities to begin talking about their identities and how that comes into play with issues such as bias-based bullying, how we can use some of our various social identities and leverage that power to create a sense of inclusion for all. The third and fourth go together, so looking at peer power and building bridges around the school and around the community across different types of social groupings. And then five, and this is really important and speaks to me as an adult, the young people said, hey, we know we can't do this alone, and we want to foster a sense of respect intergenerationally. So as adults, we need y'all to help us. We need y'all to be allies, and we need y'all to really own, you know, the things that we do that can sort of create this environment for them. So, Edwin, since you were, you know, active at the conference, is there more that you would like to share about that?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Edwin, what did you get out of the conference in terms of what was the most powerful, and which of those principles that LA talked about maybe is most important for you?
Well, I think it got into the, I think the conference really got into the specifics of basically how we treat one another. I mean, it went into things like, at the conference, we decided we didn't want to be anti-bullying, which is sort of what we labeled the conference in the first place. But we decided anti-bullying, we didn't want to be anti-anything. We wanted to be pro-love. And that's really how you solve things, is just be accepting. And I think one of the biggest things is we need to be inclusive, you know, being inclusive. Invite other people to your conversation. It seems like a small thing, but it really helps in the long run, gives everyone sort of a positive attitude. And
sure.
That's really
and
the way you
move
forward.
And you don't get little clicks and that kind of thing?
Exactly, yeah.
Because I, at least how it's portrayed in the media, too, it just seems like all these little factions of groups tend to, like, pair off into their own little area, and they don't mingle with other with their other peers. Isn't that true?
Yeah, that's exactly it. We asked all of the teenagers and all the high school students there on what they thought, and a lot of people said, you know, they really don't like cliques. Some admit to being in cliques, but they all agree that it's not really inclusive. And I think I remember one teenager saying the cafeteria every day is a battleground. You know, it's just people sticking together and going up against each other when it shouldn't be that way at all.
Mm-hmm. So there's more animosity when you're waiting in line for your food or something versus in other situations?
No, I think it's more of, I think it's just more of people tend to stick with people that they know and people that they relate to,
okay.
At least on an outer level, but it just sort of separates everyone. It just draws fine lines where you can't talk to me, only these people can talk to me, and it creates some sort of animosity.
Right, and if you maintain that sense of isolation in these subgroups here, then that lends itself to bullying and other types of alienation and violence, is that right?
Yeah, I would say that that's a pretty big part of it, just people that you think are different than you, and you think you deserve to make fun of them or bully them because they're different than you in this specific way, which is
right,
kind of where high school students, stick to each other, you know, so they don't have to bully each other. They just bully the others that are different from them.
Right, and, you know, I went to high school in the 70s, a long time ago, and I don't think that variable has never changed. You tend to stick with a group, and if you're different, I was different. I have a physical disability, so I was isolated in some ways. I just want to run down on your list on the literature in terms of targets, labeled the different types of groups that may be targets, because I found it very interesting, and maybe our national audience would find it that way as well. For example, and some are obvious and some may not be, people who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, people who dress differently, people who are socially awkward, people with mental disabilities, girls who are perceived to be whores, freshmen, physically different, kids with special needs, smart, quiet kids, minorities, the kids who try too hard to be accepted, immigrant students, people who look different, people who don't fit in the mold, nerds or weird people who are not straight, or white, shy people, non-English speakers, fat people, people of certain religions, Christians, Mormons, Jews, and Muslims, physically different, males sexually harassing females, people of lower socioeconomic class, and students who aren't popular. That is quite a list of people who are targets. What do each of you have to say about that list? It's huge.
Yeah, so a lot of things that we do in our organization when we're working with young people is providing a foundation for transformative organizing and social justice pedagogy, such as our Yes campaign, which really focused on embodying the principles and feelings of Paulo Freire. So that being said, in our Anytown Leadership Institute and in our Bridges program, we have the young people look at their various social identities. So whether you're, you know, skinny or fat or black or things like that. So those are the things that, you know, we either have privilege for or have advantages with or disadvantage or target. So we use the language of target agent identities. And when I hear that list, I'm like, wow, that's a long list. And there could be, you know, 1,000 other things that could also go onto that list. So when we work with young people, Edwin and our other interns and our youth leaders really help others to connect with their sense of self, their sense of social identities. Because, you know, I was in a training last week, and profoundly so, someone mentioned you can't change what you don't know. So a lot of us go through the world with cisgender privilege or, you know, privilege because we're able-bodied. And if we didn't understand the concept and the theoretical framework that has allowed us to have agency and privilege, it would completely, you know, change the ways that we interact in the world. So that's something that I definitely appreciate from Edwin and Giovanna and our other youth leaders who constantly increase our awareness of how our target and agent identities affect the ways that we move throughout the world. And, you know, tying it back to sort of some of the larger themes and looking at the various levels of violence, we talk a lot in our Anytown Leadership Institute about what we call the VOOM, which are the 5 major levels of violence that we see. So verbal violence, avoidance, you know, aggression, murder, things of that nature. And I think a lot of young people that go through our programs have experienced some form of violence and isolation and exclusion, and they can better understand that once they're more understanding of the ways that our target and agent identities really, you know, take root in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you back up just a little bit and explain to myself and our audience so we have clarity with regard to, well, the Yes Conference is a finite conference of a couple of days or a week, whereas Anytown starts out being a residential program, and then you carry it on into the school life perpetually. Is that right?
So let me try to explain this. Yes is a movement. It's a youth-led, youth-driven social change movement. And it was launched with this Yes Conference. So before the conference, there was lots of, you know, focus groups, listening sessions, and participatory action research. Then the conference really, you know, broadened the scope of folk who would be interested and involved. And now we are looking at ways to really cater some of this youth-led social change with specific groupings of young people. For instance, in Springfield, there's a group that we're working with and helping their youth leaders to understand, first, the fact that they have voice and agency, and two, what tools and resources from the Yes campaign would be useful in their school. We have a curriculum guide, which are a set of activities that were developed by youth, for youth. Some of our activities are, you know, some of the tried and true and tested activities, and it's the idea that young people and their adult allies, teachers, faculty, administrators could go onto our website, youthsayyes.org, download and access the materials, and really begin to implement some of the strategies in their school. We also, through our Yes initiative, have focus groups and participatory action research groups that are forming and really want the spirit of that to be carried out in the schools. Anytown, the Anytown Leadership Institute, is a year-long program that starts as a week-long residential program in the summer. So in this week, we gather up to 80, 90 young people in one of our camps for a week and take them from on day one, the cycle of oppression, and look at all of the various types of isms and end at the cycle of liberation. It's a very transformative experience. Over 90% of the young people say that this has been a life-changing experience for them.
So
and then throughout the school year, we have our Bridges program. And Bridges is a two-day intensive program that focuses on the research of Glenn S. Pate and our executive director, Dr. Andrea Candle, who really began to form this program as she was a doctoral student at the University of Massachusetts Amherst Social Justice Education Program. And our Bridges program focuses on three major things. One, developing a positive view of self. Two, to develop a positive view of others. And three, to develop critical and analytical thinking skills. It's our thinking that if we can really hit those top three, you know, targets and objectives, mm-hmm. that people will begin being nicer to each other, and we'll see positive schools all across the country. And then the last thing that we offer is our Youth Action Coalition. Edwin is one of our Youth Action Coalition interns. And through the Youth Action Coalition, we provide leadership development opportunities, you know, fun activities, at least on a monthly basis, that have young people from all of our programs talking and sharing across their schools, across their communities, about best practices, things that are working, you know, and areas where they may need some help and assistance. So, for instance, we are going next week to be a part of an organization that is forming and looking at issues of the school-to-prison pipeline and school push-out, and how, as youth leaders through NCCJ, we can help and reframe and reshape this conversation by saying, you know, instead of pushing these kids out of schools, if we give them a sense of pride and give them a sense of dignity and restore pride and dignity for all people in the school, then we can really see a positive transformation that isn't punitive. So those are some of the things that we do and that we do well. A lot of organizations, you know, have been partnering and collaborating with us, and we always extend opportunities for partnership and collaboration to have our young people increase their skills, and also because we know that this work needs to be done collaboratively.
Right. So are you looking to constantly replicate this in other schools throughout Massachusetts and Connecticut and the other groups in other states?
Yeah, we are actually. We really strongly believe that this is a youth-led, youth-driven social change movement, and we are really shaping and reshaping conversations about violence, about school pushouts, about, you know, exclusion, and we are working and extending our work around New England. We're working with a great group down in New York, so I'm going to do a shout-out to the Larchmont Avenue Church Youth Group, as they are really looking at some difficult issues and being in touch with their own social identities and understanding their own agency and broadening the conversation to reach more people. They've really, felt this energy in all aspects of their being and understand this as a model that could work for youth organizing and youth empowerment. So, we want to take everywhere.
Edwin, I'm curious as to how you became eligible or interested in this, and what was your life like before you got in touch with this organization?
Well, it originally started when I was a sophomore in high school. Before that, I was just, you know, average high school student. I wasn't a mean kid or, you know, like, I guess at risk or anything like that. It was just sort of average, but I got involved. Some of my friends were going to Camp Anytown, and I figured I might as well give it a shot, you know, see what was out there for me. So I went, and that was in May 2009.
Yeah.
And that was my first camp, and I loved it automatically. I wanted to go back as soon as I came home.
What was the best
part
about it?
What'd
you like?
Just sort of, it just seemed to be like a safe place. You went in there with like 50 people that you've never even met before, didn't know anything about, and you come back being friends with everyone, and just felt like this safe place where you felt like you belonged.
Wonderful.
so afterwards, I applied to be a counselor because once you've gone through any town once, you can apply and become a staff member, counselor, co-counselor your second time around. So I did, and I was accepted in August 2009 when the next camp was, and I was a counselor. The next year, I wasn't really involved with any town, but I sort of got back into it August 2011, and I became a counselor again. And I really started to get more involved. I started to participate more in NCCJ's, you know, their mission and all the events that they had going on, and especially the YES Conference, which Elia spoke of before. And after that, In January 2012, I became the intern for NCCJ, the YAC intern, and I've really just been trying to do my best with, you know, getting, like, youth voices, making youth voices more important, as they should be.
And do you recruit others?
Yeah, we recruit others from... just the programs that we do. We're always inviting people. If people want to join events, like our monthly YAC events, they're free to do so. It's a really, like, open environment.
Oh, good.
Even if they don't know people. Yeah. Especially with Anytown, which is sort of where people become more involved. Because after Anytown, you know, they feel sort of the same way, like they really want to get involved.
Right.
So, yeah, after the camp, most teenagers just sort of they're just sort of down with what we're trying to get out there, and they're willing to help out.
So is there a sense of graduating, or is this something that just keeps going on and blossoming and going forward? It's not, it doesn't really have a finite end period, right?
No, I don't think it has a finite end period.
Yeah.
We work with young people once they've graduated from high school, and our Youth Action Coalition, Edwin's a perfect example of that. And once they've graduated from high school, the young people really come back and are involved and help us design new workshops and become advisors and advisors in training for Anytown. So once, you know, they've participated, it really has become life transforming, and folks want to be involved and continue to learn and to grow. You know, I don't have a chance much to get a brag about Edwin to folk, but I do want to say that his leadership and skills have been inspiring not only to me, but to many other young people, and we hear that often. He has really helped us to redesign and rethink and reshape our internship program and even our youth program's office and what we're offering. I think, you know, he has gifts and skills that have helped me to see the ways in which we can be more creative and innovative about strategizing and movement building. For instance, Edwin loves music. He is an audiophile. And through his music and appreciation of music and listening to music, he can bring to the forefront a set of social justice music analysis that, you know, it really connects with young people because young people love music.
Other people, yeah, through that medium, I can understand where they'd be very powerful. Delilah, let's bring you in here. Do you have some questions here to bring to the discussion?
You know, I always do.
Good.
I think the thing that I would like to know about, first of all, I have a couple questions. You know, over the length of time, 80 years of the organization, and for what it was originally created for, how has the climate in our society changed? Has it changed, or have biases and bigotry just been retargeted to different segments of the population? What do you see has either gotten better or maybe even gotten worse?
Yeah, that's a huge question. So I think that the climate of our country has definitely changed. You know, when our organization was founded, we were looking at issues of racial and ethnic intolerance as it dealt specifically with black and brown people here in the United States and our Jewish brothers and sisters and folk in those communities. So that was our primary
focus as an organization, as a movement. The NCCJ has existed for, you know, the last 80-plus years, and at one point we had over 65 chapters of NCCJ in the country. So now I think our focus as an organization really is looking at forms, you know, where intolerance and bias and bigotry exist, and that looks lots of different ways. Our young people are really looking critically and analytically at this. For instance, an amazing young person I have an opportunity to work with, Sabrina Marie Peon, was like, hey, people are mean to fat folk. And I said, you're absolutely right. So using her skills that she's learned through the YES Conference in Anytown and Bridges and Yak, Sabrina developed a workshop that we have now added to our Anytown curriculum, and the workshop was focused on sizeism, the ways in which people are discriminated based on their size.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of shifting in our culture and reshaping of conversations, but at the end of the day, like, people are just still mean to each other. Our executive director really is able to highlight this through her analysis and being able to bring in some cultural references that are helpful. So, for example, in the movie and Broadway show South Pacific, there's a song called You've Got to Be Carefully Taught. And in the song it talks about you have to be carefully taught to hate, carefully taught to not like people. So I think it's true. The ways in which we're socialized teach us to hate. And so our job and our mission and our heart's work, our soul's passion at NCCJ is doing a lot of the unteaching and reshaping conversations so that we have safe, inclusive, affirming communities. But did that answer your question?
Yeah, it really did. And looking at the overall work that you do, I think it's fantastic. And you definitely need to be commended for what you're doing. Can you speak a little bit to maybe the adult audience out here and the listeners who are into adulthood, who have come through childhood, teen years, that, you know, they've had instances of bullying, sexual abuse, whether it's in the home or problems at school. How does that shape an adulthood, and how hard is it to break that cycle, to overcome it?
Yeah, so when we're looking at the long-lasting effects, the residual effects of bullying and violence, it's hard, right? And I think the young people need to hear more from adults who were treated unfairly and abused in this way, because if we don't know the ways in which our words and actions can affect people's lives, then it's hard to change it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think to answer your question directly about what we can do, a lot of it comes from finding strength in our own voice, in our own testimonies, in our own sharing and stories. And one of the things Edwin and I and Jovan and I are working on over the next year is really training young people and adults together in intergenerational settings and looking at shaping public narrative around this. So what is your story? What is the story of us, and what is the story of now? How can we begin to build bridges across our pain and across our differences to find some sense of common ground?
Do you have public speaking opportunities for older adults, such as, well, I'm old, I'm not necessarily, but to impart our stories of pain or discrimination or what have you to the younger generation? I mean, is that a kind of interaction that you do within your program, curriculum?
So we used to have a program called Community Conversations, and a lot of the community conversations were based on race. And these were open for adult learners as well as those, whoever wanted to come. I think Edwin and Giovanna both said they would like opportunities for this type of intergenerational learning. So it's our hope that over the next year, 18 months, we can continue to work in this intergenerational dialogue and pilot some new types of transformative organizing and conversations that would allow space
for adults to share their stories and share their experiences.
Oh, good. So there is a possibility of that, because I think there's a lot for each to learn from each other, and it's very powerful. And like you say, if they don't know our stories and we can't connect with them, then, you know, there's that disconnect.
Yeah, and, you know, during our Bridges and our Anytown Leadership Institute, all of the adults that are in the room have opportunities to share their stories. One of the things that we like to model, especially when we're facilitating these learning and training experiences, is sharing our stories. So often Edwin and Giovanna and our other interns and myself will really talk about, you know, experiences in our lives that have shaped who we are. So mm-hmm. I will talk honestly about, you know, how I was bullied as a kid. I was with a group of fifth grade girls in Springfield on Friday, and they asked me if I was bullied. I said yes. And they said, well, do you still think about it? Yeah, I think about it often. Because
mm-hmm.
you know, it's that pain. And Henry Nouwen wrote a book called The Wounded Healer, and I think we all carry these wounds. So if we can all talk about our wounds and acknowledge them, then we can all be healed. We need a sense of community healing, and that healing will lead to transformation. That's what we believe at our core.
Right. Well, since, and this may be kind of an obvious question, but I'm curious with regard to, you are a reverend, and you've been the head of five different types of churches. What type of involvement have you had with other church communities with respect to this? Or you're certainly not a one-woman band in this, are you?
No, not at all. We work with lots of different faith groups in our work, and we actually have a house of worship tour, which allows young people from, you know, urban areas and the suburbs to come together and really work on creating this, you know, interfaith dialogue and community. So in our House of Worship tour, we took young people from the Christian Church, the United Methodist Church, young folk who were attending and participating in the Muslim mosque and the Jewish community, and began to have some of these hard conversations. So personally, I consider myself, you know, an urban street guerrilla minister. Where there is need and people, the Rev Latte will be. So it's taking off sort of that denominational hat and that specific faith identity hat, right? Because as growing up in the Methodist Church, I had privilege of being a Christian in the United States. And I understand now more than ever the ways in which that can really end conversations and cause harm to other people, because as a Christian, you know, we walk around with lots of Christian privilege. So acknowledging that and sharing that has been healing for some of our young people. So I think that our ability to have the conversations around, you know, faith identity and what's important, and realize that regardless of what your faith identity is, like, we are all here because we have purpose and we have right to be here. We have, you know, dignity and a shared common humanity, and that's more important, because often faith separates and divides us. So, you know, as the Rev Latte, one of my commitments, I'm a commitment to show up in authenticity and integrity all day, every day. And I think that just showing up and being honest and being authentic and in integrity is more transformative than, you know, getting in a pulpit and making statements and judgments about other people's lives. So, Edwin, what's your experience of that?
Yeah.
Well, I've just been with my experience, I think it's just sort of, I think the biggest thing is we just need to be open-minded. I mean, speaking on my experiences with bullying, I never really had that many experiences with bullying, and I'm grateful for that. I can't really remember, you know, being bullied all throughout high school. But it really helps me to sort of look at myself and look at others and not judge them based on, you know, who they appear to be or what they appear to be going through. I think it's the most important thing is we just need to be open-minded and put ourselves in other people's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to see the decisions people make and the decisions we should be making, whether in the way we act towards people or the way we talk towards people or even the way we think towards people. I think that's the way I've been trying to live my life, is just put myself in someone else's shoes. Whether I may not agree with something or not, I think I should, you know, try to be understanding, as understanding as possible.
Right, and by rising to the ranks of this organization and being a leader, you are your own role model. And, you know, I'm wondering, can you tell me, in your opinion, either of you, are there particular, quote-unquote, target groups that you feel today, right now, in February 2013, are more at risk than any other faction of youth, or are they all equally as vulnerable?
I would say all target identities are, you know, equally targeted. But I guess to answer the question fully, I would say youth, especially LGBTQ teens, you know, lesbian, gay, bisexual, et cetera. I think they've always been targeted, but and they're starting to make leaps and strides more recently, but of course they still are targeted. I think it could be said for anyone, but that's what I see, like, right now in February 2013.
Yeah, I agree with Edwin, and I would also add to that, folk who do not fit the conventional box. So we've been talking with lots of young people in schools about folk being bullied because they're not pretty enough or not handsome enough or they're too fat or they're too skinny. So this idea of looksism and sizeism is extremely prominent in one of the foremost causes for bullying in the schools that we work with.
Mm-hmm. Or that whole idea of being perfect in, especially physically. And do you feel that social media or any form of media has really created that situation?
Absolutely. We are looking at issues of cyberbullying and cyberviolence. Because we want to reshape the conversation about what is violence. Like, if you're bullying me on Facebook because you don't like me based on one of my target identities, perhaps you don't like me because I'm a fat, queer black woman, you know, just hypothetically, and you post lots of hateful and negative stuff on my Facebook and get other people to post, it's like the bullying never stops. I go to school and I'm bullied, then I come home and I'm bullied. So I really think this is important as adults for us to address and help our young people navigate.
Mm-hmm.
And do you feel like the issue of sexual identity is coming to the forefront even at a younger and younger age in our society? I think, you know, in back in my generation, because I'm really old, I mean, I know that in high school or junior high or whenever, that did struggle with that issue, but it seems like it was done, and this is just because of the way society was then, it was done in silence, not to say that children didn't suffer with it more, they didn't. But is it a case where it seems to be more in the forefront? It's more acknowledged and it's discussed more. So what are your feelings on that? How have things changed over the generations with children dealing with this? And do we have better resources now?
You know, that's a tough question. Edwin, Jovana, and I have been doing a lot of research and having lots of conversations about generations and specifically looking at the ways in which millennials are interacting with each other. Because millennials, you know, Edwin, Jovana, and I are all in the millennial generation, have a very different worldview and come from a different point of departure. And I think bullying on our target identities, though we are one of the most diverse generations, is significant. And I do believe there are a lot of resources out there, but unfortunately, what happens is that we, you know, go to the nonprofits, which are trying to sustain and uphold the nonprofit. We have a rise of thousands, millions of nonprofits around the world. which contributes to the nonprofit industrial complex. So what happens is we become less concerned with, you know, doing the good work and doing the transformative organizing and training leaders and really embodying social justice. And the young people can see through all of that, right? They can see that we lack integrity in our organizations and the nonprofit world often. And I
you mean
think
because there's too many of them? Is that what you're saying?
What was that?
Do you mean because there's too many of them or?
Because of the system, right? So the Women of Color Leadership Network was looking at this, and young people have this value in the millennial generation where we're sort of untrusting of the organization and the systems and the way things
right.
were done and always done.
Okay.
I'm not saying our organization is like that, but these are the types of things that we hear from young people. So there may be an abundance of resources, but making the connection between the resources and the people who need them is not always easy. We are being called in 2013 and this, you know, decade and this era to be relationship builders. What is being fractured are relationships. Our schools and our young people lack emotional intimacy. If we had emotional intimacy, authenticity, and integrity in our schools and in our environments, in their world, I strongly believe we would see, like, immense decreases in bias-based bullying and hatred and bias and bigotry. But we can't begin to have those honest conversations about, you know, resources and if there's enough resources until we're actually developing the relationships with the young people on the ground in the school. Edwin and I have been in, you know, quite a few schools over the last week, really walking the halls with kids, talking with the teachers, talking with the young people, and asking them what they need. Because what they are telling us and what they need is a lot different from what we can provide sitting in our office if we're disconnected.
Right.
So I think, you know, my call and my urge would be, let's get connected with the young people in some really real, transparent ways and live ourselves as examples of what inclusion and safety and affirmation can look like.
Right. LA, have you been inundated with calls since Sandy Hook 2 months ago with regard to consults and getting involved in schools?
Yeah, so we've, and trust me, you should ask. So, yeah, we've received lots of calls and emails, and which is both great and disturbing. It's really sad that it takes such a horrific tragedy to mm-hmm. get folks thinking about creating safe and positive school climates. And, you know, we have cities all across the nation where violence, gun violence, intimate partner violence, domestic violence, youth-on-youth violence is happening every day. You know, I lived in Bel Air, Maryland, which is northeast of Baltimore City. And in Baltimore City, like, young people, it's just terrible, 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 the violence that young people face. So I think this is definitely a wake-up call for our communities mm-hmm. and for our organizations on how, as adults, we can be more responsible for helping to reshape some of the violence that the young people are facing in our schools, and how do we take a stand to not only take back our schools, but empower youth to leadership and innovation and movement and their liberation. So I think, yes, to answer your question briefly, and it's still, there's a sense that's sort of disturbing that it would take
urgency
that.
And calls. So what are you initially telling them when they call, when, you know, whichever of the 169 towns in Connecticut and they call and those in Massachusetts, what are you telling them?
Let's have coffee.
Let's have coffee and we'll put you on the list and we'll try to come and do some programming or
and Edwin can speak more to this too. Like,
okay.
Our approach is let's have coffee. Let's get to know you. Let's get to know your school. Let's get to know your community and see what you need, what you might not. You may not need our services. You may need just somebody to come in there and really tell the kids that they are loved and they are worthy and deserve to be there. Because a lot of times what we're finding is that there's just a gap, right? Teachers are stressed trying to do the testing and this and that and the other. So we can perform that. We can come in and sort of hold the gap and be that listening voice and affirming ear
And, you know, we're all about relationship building. Everything that we do is relationship-centered and oriented.
I see. Well, that sounds great. What type of time commitment is there for students with regard to all of the different facets that are going on? Edwin, can you speak to that? Are you there?
Edwin?
Is he there?
I think his phone was off there. So the time commitment that you're looking at, it really depends on what the young people are able to offer. We have some folk that come into the office every day during the summer. We have folk that come once a month for our YAC events. So whatever you are willing to offer and give, we will work with. But we like to see people who are really dedicated to this at their core.
Right. Are you there, Edwin?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, you're there? Okay, I don't know if you had...
Yep, sorry about that.
Okay, we were just asking about the time commitment. How many hours on average per week are you involved with this group?
I put in as much time as I possibly can. I'm in school Mondays and Wednesdays, but I'm in the office Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and I'm and especially the weekends, if there's an event coming up, I just try and put in as much time as I can, you know, because it's just the way it works out for me.
Right, and that's true. And, you know, we have about 8 minutes left of our show, just to let you know, because that's being the timekeeper here, and it's just flying by. But I'm wanting to know, too, what message would you like to get across to our national audience, you know, just in general or specific with regard to things that they may not realize? And, you know, you have the floor, you have the stage. What do you want to convey to people that maybe we haven't discussed up to this point? Either of you.
So, you know, Edwin, would you like to go first on this one?
Yeah, sure. I guess just to put it simply, I mean, people may know this, but it's just, I think it's really important. I think both me and LA touched on this subject.
Mm-hmm.
I think what people just need to do is just realize where other people are coming from, and just to generally be nice, be positive towards other people, because it really makes a difference. You know, if something is bothering you, be sure to fix the problem. It sounds simple to say, but it really goes a long way.
Right. And
yeah.
It seems such a simple concept, doesn't it? But people are, a lot of times, are not nice. And they haven't been taught how to be nice. And LA, what do you think about that? I mean, what's your kernels of wisdom that you would like to impart?
Yeah, so I guess I have a couple of things on that as we're looking at sharing with young people. First of all, we have to know. You have to share your experience if you want there to be healing and transformation. It's often hard to chat about that. We work with young people, and I often share with them Audre Lorde's Litany for Survival. And I'll just share this last part. So it is better to speak, remembering we were never meant to survive. We have to speak out because our survival depends on it and our liberation movement depends on it. And also, you know, in the words of John Wesley, it needs to be our job to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, right? Because there's young people, there's adults who are very comfortable in their lifestyles and ways of being and looking at really making them uncomfortable with this.
Afflict the comfortable. I like that.
Yeah. So
you know,
afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. And then finally, just that, you know, we really are here as resources, and we believe strongly in youth voice and youth liberation. Our theme for this last Anytown was Channel Your Orange, which was based off of Frank Ocean's CD, Channel Orange. And Frank Ocean is one of the, I guess, first out bisexual black rappers, hip-hop artists. And channel orange, he said, you know, I chose this because when I channel my orange, I'm channeling my own liberation, I'm channeling my own happiness, I'm channeling my own resiliency. So we encourage people to channel your orange. What is it that makes your soul happy? What is it that your soul is longing for? What do you care about? Channel that positivity, channel that inclusion, channel that affirmation, and help others to channel their orange as well.
Wow, yeah, that certainly, I think, would reach your millennial generation, and they could relate to that. Can you tell us if there are youth listening and they'd like to get in touch with you and get involved, how would they do that? And do you also, are you nonprofit status? Do you accept donations?
We do accept donations. And the young folk can get in touch with us on the Book of Face at facebook.com/NCCJAnyTown or twitter.com/YouthSayYes. Those are the best ways to get in touch with us, get our information, updates, and all of that. And also they can go to YouthSayYes.org.
YouthSayYes.org. Well, what do you have? We have just a couple more minutes. What do you have planned that's coming up for the future in terms of events? Anything in particular you'd like to share?
Yeah, we're going down to New Haven to collaborate with some partners from around the state of Connecticut, looking at issues of the school-to-prison pipeline and school pushouts. We're going to have a viewing of Breaking the Codes, a viewing of the Central Park Five by Ken and Sarah Burns, a social justice 24-hour movie night, which has been really successful. We'll have some upcoming opportunities for young people to learn public narrative and for young people to begin participating in youth participatory action research. Any town is right around the corner, so it is a busy, busy time of year for us.
Oh, it sounds it. Can you just tell us also, what's your definition of school push out, just so that we know what you're referring to when you say that?
Yeah, so young people who are most affected by this are youth of color, and they're being pushed out of schools due to their punitive efforts. So, like, if I have 5 detentions, then that will lead to a suspension, and so many suspensions will lead to expulsion. And a lot of these zero-tolerance policies literally push kids out of school. So we're looking at ways to rechannel and reshape this conversation, and how do we effectively begin to look at, you know, really what would end up being is systemic education reform that puts youth voice and youth liberation at the forefront.
Oh, wow. Well, I think that clarifies it for me. And, you know, I wish you all the best in the future. I hope that you will stay in touch with me, because perhaps we can do something else in the future. This has been very, very inspiring. And I just want to say before we close out, please be sure to visit the websites that LA had just talked about, and visit DonnaGore.com for upcoming posts about a variety of topics and to learn more about me, Lady Justice. It's I always appreciate it very much if you share my links. And please do stay tuned for next week, Saturday, another show. We look forward to it at 5 p.m. Eastern time, and always on the archives. So I'm going to say thank you so much, Edwin. Look for a blog tomorrow. We'll have a podcast for you. Thank you, LA. And good evening. Thank you so much to Lila, and I'll talk to you out there. Good night.
Good night. Have a good one. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks.